Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Our weekly conversations always include you. If you'd like to join us tonight, the phone lines are open. From Oahu, our number is 941-3689. That's 941-3689. And from the neighbor islands, or if you're listening to the live stream from someplace else, you can join us at 877-941-3689. 2.5 months ago came the news that Florida-based energy company NextEra and Hawaiian Electric Industries had agreed to combine. HEI is the parent of Hawaiian Electric, Maui Electric, and Hawaii Electric Light. It's also the parent of ASB Hawaii, which owns American Savings Bank, and which would be spun off as a separate publicly traded company owned by HEI shareholders. There's been a lot of conversation about the deal and what it could mean for Hawaii ratepayers if the deal is allowed to complete. Governor Ige's nominee to head the Public Utilities Commission, Randy Iwase, was recommended by a Senate panel this week. And he says that although he doesn't have to, he plans to hold hearings throughout Hawaii. If and how the PUC okays the deal is very much up for consideration, and whether ratepayers will get a break from the highest energy prices in the nation is still up for debate. Tonight, we're going to talk about that deal on Town Square. Our panel includes Ted Peck from December 2007 through January 2011. He was the state's energy administrator and helped shepherd Hawaii's clean energy initiative. He left that job to become president of Kuakoa and had wanted to buy HEI Industries, the parent of HECO. Ted Peck is Hawaii sales manager for the Wisconsin-based ZBB Energy Corporation and president of Tianshan Renewable Energy, LLC. Henry Curtis is also here. He's the executive director of the environmental advocacy organization Life of the Land. This year marks his 20th year in that position. He also writes his blog, Ililani Media, and is a member of the Kale Maile Ali'i Hawaiian Civic Club. Life of the Land is one of the interveners in the PUC Next Era docket. And to complete tonight's panel, Jeff Michelina is here. He's the CEO of Blue Planet Foundation, a nonprofit organization working to clear the path for clean energy in Hawaii. For 10 years prior to his work with the foundation, he was the director of the Sierra Club Hawaii chapter. Blue Planet is also an intervener in the PUC Next Era docket. And you are here, too. Again, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for being here. Good
Aloha.
To see you. Most people have been hearing about this now for 2 years, two months in fits and spurts. And there are so many questions that surround the deal. This week, more and more organizations have been joining the PUC docket and looking at how much control are we really going to have over this. It looks pretty good so far anyway that Randy Iwase is going to head the PUC. But I want to go right around the table and just get some sense from each of you of where you think we are in this deal right now. And then we're just going to talk more fully about what issues we need to be paying attention to. So I'll start with you, Henry.
Well, first, welcome, Beth Ann. Thank you for having me on the show and these guests. First, there has been a lot of interest by the public in these proceedings. For the first time ever, 32 parties and interveners have proposed to be in one docket. That's never happened before. The record has been 26. So there's a lot of interest across the state. Right now, we're in the phase where NextEra is selling the image of purchasing the utility, but they have not gone inside the company and explained how they would save any money and therefore how they would lower rates.
So you're saying we don't get a lot of substance yet?
None. They're only the salespeople are here. Then come the people who explain how they integrate, and then comes the people who actually carry out that mission. So until we figure out how they would actually lower rates, it's all their PR people spinning it.
All right. Next to you, Jeff Michelina.
Yeah, again, thanks, Beth Ann. It's great to be here and talking about this critical issue. Over the next 2 years, it's really going to be a pivotal time for energy in Hawaii. Really, over the centuries of energy use in Hawaii, the next couple of years are really going to shape the future of how we produce and use energy here in the islands. As we look at it, I mean, all of us are kind of working in a vacuum right now. I think Henry and Ted will agree, we don't have a lot of information about what this means for Hawaii. We can all speculate. We can look at how this company has behaved in Florida. I think on the positive side, some people are excited about the possibility of a company like this having the ability to borrow low-cost capital and make necessary investments in the grid that we need here. On the flip side, some people are worried about customer choice and looking at Hawaii as a captive market where they could essentially do business as usual and get us locked into maybe fossil fuel for the long term into the future. So I think all of us are sort of looking at this, wondering what this means, what type of NextEra we can get, which company, and how does this benefit Hawaii?
Whether this looks like it's going to be a good deal for ratepayers or whether they'll simply be exploited.
I think those are fair questions to ask. And the Public Utilities Commission, I mean, they're front and center in making that decision.
Which moves us to you, Ted Peck. When you look at the deal now and also the fact that we have a PUC that's now changing its guard or looks like it's going to, is this a real opportunity for the PUC to take a leadership position in a way that it hasn't in years past?
Well, as I think about the PUC over the last 10, 12 years, it's continually improved in terms of the independence and the level of professionalism. We have had, you know, when I was in government, we had three very good commissioners, conscientious commissioners. They've just gotten better from there. I think that we're in a pretty good position from a competency standpoint. The thing I worry about, I think, which we've always talked about, is just capacity. You know, are they going to have the capacity to do this? But they can get that on a contract basis, and it sounds like the legislature is thinking about how best to support them to do their job. But it really, you know, think people forget that the utility works for the PUC. So the PUC tells them what they have to do. In a rate case, it's the utility, in a manner of speaking, has the high ground because they're coming and there's a certain structure that they're laying out and there's a lot of complexity in that. And there's certainly a lot of complexity in this, but in this case, because of the latitude that the commission has, they really kind of have the high ground to set some terms and conditions for what the utility needs to do in order for them to approve the deal.
Do you both agree with that?
Certainly. And you say PUC, I would say public. They are a public utility. They work in service of the public. And we can shape that framework in which they operate. Some of those things that are under consideration at the Public Utilities Commission today are how do we compensate the utility in the future? You know, for a century, we've sort of had this cost-plus model where they make necessary investments in our utility system, and then we reward them with a little profit on top. Maybe we need to get rid of that and use an incentive-based system. These are the sorts of things that will determine what type of utility we have in Hawaii, and it's really up to us to decide what that's going to be. And
Henry Curtis, jump in here.
The Public Utilities Commission definitely has the upper hand because they can say no and NextEra is gone. So that's clearly the upper hand. However, I think the public also has the upper hand because how the public reacts to this whole thing will sway a lot of what may be major influence on the PUC, on the legislature, on everything else.
I would agree.
And that would include those of you listening. How are you processing whatever part of the NextEra HEI deal that you've known about now for about 2 months? We want to hear from you. Our number is 941-3689. That's the number to use if you're on Oahu, 941-3689. And if you're calling us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream someplace else and want to participate, you can. The phone lines are open at 877-941-3689. The PUC and the fact that it looks like it's going to be under the leadership of Randy Iwase, and you say that, you know, you all agreed they've got the upper hand, they need to lead with this. He seems to already be making a position statement about how he's going to do that. You know, this week saying that doesn't have to hold hearings, but wants to do that throughout Hawaii. Does that give you more confidence, or does that make you a little concerned that maybe this is just a positioning statement and not necessarily something that will be followed up on? Because we've seen that happen in other cases before. Jeff Michelina.
No, I think it gives us some confidence. as he has to be very careful about statements he makes, obviously, about this, because this is pending.
Well, people are going to hold him to it. We certainly are.
Sure, pending before them. But the indications we have is that he is going to be open to, you know, folks, bring many folks at the table and getting all the interests involved to share their views. And I guess we'll see in upcoming weeks and how many interveners he actually allows into the docket to see if is this going to be a narrow sort of thing where just a few power players make the decision, or is it really going to be quite open where people can essentially interrogate the different parties and get some information out and have a really open public process. We hope it's the latter.
And an example of that, there was a public hearing required for a transmission line for solar facilities out in Waianae. And they the PUC had a public hearing, but some people in the community felt the hearing was in the wrong place. So Randy Iwase agreed to have a second public hearing out there that was not required. That's an indication that he wants to have a broader input.
What about NextEra itself? I mean, I can't imagine it's terribly happy about having all these interveners. Is it actually taking steps to limit those interveners? Anybody have any intel about that?
Yes. So far, they've filed motions time-wise. After each group intervenes, they'll file a motion against that group intervening. So they filed a motion saying that KIUC should not be in the docket.
That's just I wouldn't expect them to say, please, come one, come all. I mean, I wouldn't read into that hostility. I think that's just a normal position. You know, you kind of.
Or practicality?
Well, no, I wouldn't say it's a utility. It's, you know, and they're lawyers. So the lawyers are going to act when what they perceive their interest. They're going to say, it's, you know, what's the upside?
It's like when you're at the wedding and say, does anyone object to this marriage? You know, you don't want anyone jumping up and saying.
Right. You don't want to bring all the old boyfriends.
But they ask the question.
Well, they don't always.
All right. Well, tonight we are asking questions. And if you have one, you are more than welcome to join us. Our number is 941-3689 from Oahu and 877-941-3689. Tonight we're talking about the NextEra HEI deal. Henry Curtis is here from Life of the Land, Jeff Michelina from Blue Planet Foundation, and Ted Peck from his now own organization, Tianjin Energy. Thanks for joining us, for all of you who are here with us tonight. Again, if you've got a question, now's the time to ask. We're going to go to Larry calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Larry. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. My major question about the PUC here is their ability to handle NextEra competently, and that NextEra is a fairly large utility from the mainland, and our PUC is tremendously understaffed. I mean, they're not by far the only state agency that won't fully hire, but how are they supposed to handle these people when they don't even have a full staff?
All right, Larry, thanks very much for the question. PUC has gotten some help lately, maybe not all the help that they need, but are they as bad off as Larry seems to think they are and not able to handle this?
I don't think that's an abnormal situation. Typically, you know, if you think about it, you know, the SEC kind of comes to mind. The SEC is just historically way under capable for the regulatory responsibilities it has. There are some very competent people at the PUC, and they have the ability to hire consultants to help them to do things and bring in expertise that they don't have in-house. So the result isn't typically, and I'd ask you guys, tell me if I'm wrong, it's not that they do bad things, it's that they take a long time.
Okay, so Ted says it's a function of having enough time to be able to do this. Sometimes it takes longer time, but they do have competent people and can hire out to consultants. Are either one of you, Jeff Michelina or Henry Curtis, worried about the PUC being able to handle a deal such as NextEra?
No, Henry. I'm not concerned about that in terms of their ability. The problem is, as we say, there are a lot of dockets on their plate right now, and this is another one. So if we have the time, or if they hire additional staff, that's fine. I'm not worried. The gas company is also owned by a large out-of-country parent. So, and the gas company is an intervener in this. This is the first time we've seen a water utility, an electric utility, and a gas utility all intervene in somebody else's docket.
Which makes this even more of an interesting situation and why we're talking about it tonight. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open. We're talking about the merger of NextEra and HEI and what that might mean. There's so much conjecture about this because there's just a lot of information that we don't have yet. But what it could mean and how we're exploring this is what we're doing tonight on Town Square. And if you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Chris calling us from Oahu. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to Town Square.
Hello. I'm really interested in hearing about the history of this company on the mainland. I heard that there is experience with them in Florida, and I just wonder if you have any comments about the kind of business these folks do and the reaction of the consumers in those different markets. Thanks very much.
Thanks for your question. Who wants to take that one on? I know everyone here has done some due diligence on this company, but Jeff, why don't you go first?
Sure. Again, this brings up the question of who do we get? Do we get the Florida Power and Light entity? Do we get the NextEra Energy, which is actually the largest, provider of renewable energy in the country? I think that excites some people. But when you look at Florida Power and Light, they operate within the framework in Florida. They haven't been the most although consumers might say they're great because they have lower than average rates than nationwide rates, but they're not terribly friendly to customer-sided renewable energy, of which we have tons in Hawaii, the most in the nation per capita. You know, some 12% of customers generate their own power on the rooftop.
So how much does that perhaps concern you a bit?
In Florida, you have a few hundred systems in the Sunshine State. So that's definitely a concern because we think it's a value that we have here, that there's customer choice and folks ought to be able to invest private capital in, getting towards our renewable energy future. But again, this gets back to this fundamental question of we can set up this policy framework in which they operate. And number two, nothing changes the fundamentals, and we might get into this later. I know Ted's interested in this for sure. That technology is changing so rapidly that you can increasingly have customers that can fire the utility. And since this is the case, it doesn't necessarily matter who owns the utility if these underlying fundamentals are going where we see them going.
And you might be able to fire them at some point in the future.
Yeah, the analogy I like to use, in 1999, many people in the United States and in Europe were worried about the Microsoft monopoly. In fact, the federal government took Microsoft to court, and they were in court for several years. The outcome was basically a draw. They didn't force them to split between their operating system company and their Microsoft Office company. They left them intact. But nobody today is concerned about the Microsoft monopoly. And it's not because the regulatory action. It's because of Google. It's because the market found an alternative. What's happening in taxi cabs today with Uber and Lyft.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And even as Jeff was saying, what's happening in technology is taking this about 100-year-old model. We kind of think of it as forever, but Samuel Insull, basically, in Chicago in the late 1800s, early 1900s, bought up all the generators, strung them together, and got regulators to say, we'll give you a monopoly as long as we get to vote on your price. And he actually kept instituting rate decreases to keep the regulators happy. And as a result, he got a monopoly. And that was really the birth of the public electric utility. We in Hawaii are in a pretty unique situation. People talk about the canary in the coal mine or the postcard to the future. But you can do a lot, even at 25 cents a kilowatt hour. And what we're dealing with here, the utility in its current model is operating based on selling the, gold, which
yeah,
the
it
price
creates
just
it,
keeps
it sells
going
it.
Up
yeah.
and up. Well, it's a commodity.
Right.
We have this low price moment. But that's really what it is. The price is going to go back up, but what renewables are, they're like your cell phone. The capability goes up, the price goes down.
That's true to an extent. The problem is we're in a period of enormous flux, and the utility has come in, and they're basically going to lay out a huge capital budget on something to do with LNG, liquefied natural gas, and or the smart grid, and or the inter-island cable, and they're going to say, we're going to put all this money on the table, and your rates are going to go down. And as Senator Baker said, when and how? And the question is, unlike Microsoft, which Google came in, and unlike the taxi cabs or Uber and Lyft are coming in, if they do all of this and the PUC approves it, somebody within Hawaii, the ratepayers or the taxpayers, are going to foot the bill for the new, when the new paradigm puts them out of business. And therefore, there is an enormous risk factor associated with this, and that risk factor has to be part of the analysis.
So how concerned are you about this deal after you just heard what Life of the Land Executive Director Henry Curtis had to say? I know we've got to have a rebuttal here because Ted Peck has something to say about that.
Yeah, I agree with Henry, but I would just remind everybody that that risk doesn't stand alone. That risk needs to be compared against the business-as-usual risk. And the business-as-usual risk is not just a risk of oil. We have a decrepit grid that basically is, you know, run to failure. Those generators that the utility has today, they are going to cost $5 billion either to upgrade or replace. It's just a question of whether we're going to replace them with nimble turbine generators that can burn natural gas, can burn LSFO, you know, one or the other, or if we're going to upgrade them as the big lumbering elephants so that they meet the MACT EPA requirements. Price tag is actually pretty close, regardless of which path you're doing.
So your point is they're moving down the path toward failure anyway. They're going to have to be replaced. The question is, do you put money into something that you think is going to have some real growth potential in the future, or keep doing what we're doing?
Well, and Henry talked about smart grid. Okay, that's fine. And LNG, and I know my two colleagues are not in the LNG camp, and I'm certainly not in the LNG camp, but I kind of look at it.
Is it a bridge?
Kind of sanguine. Well, the fact of the matter is, in my view, we are a long way from 100% renewable. You know, even I do renewable energy projects, and high rises simply have a difficult time getting the renewable resource to go 100% off grid. It's kind of ironic. You know, we've been kind of a leading edge state putting solar on a roof. You know, I have 15 panels on my roof, but it doesn't generate enough for my house and my car, right? I have a Leaf. And so for me, I've actually given thought to just ripping those off and putting in higher power density panels so I can zero out my car as well. So my point is that fossil fuel is going to be a part of our equation for a while. So we need to be thoughtful about what path we choose. And when people talk about LNG as a bridge, that's kind of where we want to be. We want to click our heels and say, oh, it's a bridge to, you know, a wonderful future. But I think we are, and I'm interested to understand, you're pointing to Jeff, as to how he thinks we're going to get, you know, there's a bill to get into 100% renewable. I'm cautious about that. And today we need to build infrastructure. The key, in my view, is how big do you build that infrastructure? Because you have to pay for it. So you want to build it so that it's big enough to get us to where we want to go, but not so big so that we're laden with it and we have to use it. In other words, we have all this cost embedded in there where we have to pay for it anyway, so we might as well
right.
not go to.
But you're also asking, what infrastructure are you going to build? That's part of it too. If you'd like to join the conversation about what we might see in our energy future, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to James calling us from Kapoho. Aloha, James. Thank you for your patience.
Yes. I have a photovoltaic array on my house for the last 3 years, and I sized it such that I would generate just about as well as I need or a little more. So, and I pay the minimum bill most months. Occasionally I get a little, if I run too many tools or something. But will my contract still be valid with this new company, or will they just, you know, do what they want?
All right, good question, James. Thank you very much. I mean, in part, could we say we really don't know? because we really don't know anything about this yet, but he has a valid concern.
I think,
Jeff McLean,
James, you do, and 50,000 other customers have the same concern. And then those prospective customers who are wondering what sort of deal they can get if they choose to put photovoltaic or some other renewable energy device on their home. We think there's probably going to be some evolution in that program that's called net energy metering. We hope it moves to something like a smart energy metering where we do more of a time of use rate that reflects the actual needs of energy on the grid at any given time. And then hopefully the utility, whoever the owner is, develops interesting rate schedules to help encourage innovation at the end of the wire. So if someone like Ted has an electric vehicle, perhaps they will stop him charging it for 10 minutes at a time because the wind died down somewhere. Or someone might have a battery at home, and they might be able to use that to help stabilize the grid. So we hope that we have this new model in the future where folks can get photovoltaic, the values that it provides are compensated. But it's really a smart program and not just a one just based on, even currently you can argue that it's just not necessarily reflective of what we need on the grid.
You are all making the point, and Henry, I want to ask you this too, that we're pinning a lot of hopes and dreams on a future that we haven't fully seen develop because we can't, obviously. And how we go from here to there is somewhat of an unknown path too. How concerned are you when you hear a caller like James say, but I've got this system already. What do I do?
I agree that we're at an enormous period of flux. I'm less worried about where we're going to go because we have the PUC in the driver's place and we have a lot of parties involved. I think there are far more than two paths forward, and they all involve different levels of reliability, cost, and risk. For example, in the docket, there are three interveners who want to put on island systems separate from either the current utility or the new utility. Two competing models for the Big Island and one model for Maui. So we are having an enormous number of different ideas. And even the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, intervened in this docket. And we at Life of the Land are really pleased at the number of different interests showing up at the table, because this is a conversation we need to have about where Hawaii is going.
So this is a really good outcome, at least from the flux that we've seen so far, to be able to bring people together to have a conversation in a way that we haven't had before. Do the two of you agree, Ted Peck and Jeff McLean? We really haven't had the conversation to this level before?
Well, this certainly expedites and brings it to a head of sorts.
Well, I don't know that I'd say it expedites. I think it is definitely a significant conversation, and a lot of people are interested in doing it. I sometimes there's a lot more noise than light.
Well, are you seeing more light this time? I mean, you've been around for sort of several of these conversations now, but in what we've been able to see so far, and granted, it's not a lot. I mean, that's where we keep coming back to, that we don't know what we don't know until we do. And whenever that happens over the next, you mentioned, next year to 2 years, where we start to get more of these answers and shape that conversation a little differently. But at least the fact that it's being poked at so much at this point, does that give us an opportunity to shape that future a little differently, perhaps, than we would if we weren't able to do it like this?
Yeah, and getting to, Ted nailed it when he was talking about it's up to us. I mean, the Public Utilities Commission, the public, they're a regulated monopoly. We can set that framework, and we can set out, this is what we want the utility. This is the type of utility we want. This is the proper role for them. These are the services that they'll provide. Here's how they'll be rewarded. So this provides an opportunity to do that, regardless of whether or not NextEra actually succeeds in the acquisition or not.
All right. Well, we have several people who want to get in on the conversation right now. Henry, you want to say
something quickly? I just want to say something quick. One thing that would be important is every party that gets in can fire off information requests, discovery, to NextEra and the utilities, so we can get answers fairly quickly, or they can show that there are resisting answers.
All right. We're going to go now to Lloyd calling us from Haiku. Aloha, Lloyd. Welcome to Town Square.
Oh, thank you. It's a good discussion. And I just wanted to point out that recently the problem that's happening with rail, one of the cost overruns, one of the suggestions is to change the types of wheels that are used, but they can't make those changes. This is an example of technology change that very well could influence the future of the decisions made now, relative to this energy plan. I also wanted to point out that we should look at the car companies as an example of what I'm going to say next, and that has to do with individual responsibility. When we bailed out the car companies, that money could have been used to creating a vehicle that had solar, that absorbed solar and put it into motion. But we went along the same paradigm of building larger companies based on the same paradigm. And the problem with this thinking is that we're running into dead ends in many aspects of our society, especially where Wall Street and the investment bankers are coming into communities and creating business models that really don't work. So I caution everybody to think about the idea of each individual taking more responsibility for their energy needs, and in this way changing our culture even a bit to make a difference. Thank you.
All right, Lloyd, thanks very much. But in what he was talking about with the car industry, that in some way, Ted, seems to be making the point that you were making a moment ago, that you can put it into old technology and keep doing what you're doing to keep it going and chugging along, or you make what some people might look at as a radical change.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to ring the bell for markets, the value of allowing the markets to do what markets do well, which is to drive innovation. You know, government can kind of seed innovation and help innovation through what they call the valley of death, when you have going from a good idea to actually commercialization and revenue. But I'm hopeful that the PUC in its decisions will, you know, whether it's solar, whether it's storage, whether it's NextEra, that it will be an advocate for innovation, because what innovation is going to do is going to drive down cost. Innovation at the end will drive down costs. And NextEra, you know, brings much more capacity. The bill that's shutting down the state's ability to do an inter-island cable, a lot of folks don't understand that the reason why that structure was put in place was because HECO didn't have the financial lift to do it themselves. And so the state was going to come alongside them and help them. NextEra does have the capability to do it themselves. So if that bill passes and we remove that structure that's all in place, it doesn't mean we can't do an inter-island cable. It just means that the state doesn't have to do it. NextEra can do it, of course, with the proper oversight and permits, you know, and environmental reviews. But NextEra can be a plus, because they have the ability to help us drive transformation,
all
if
right.
That's their heart to do.
Henry, you wanted to answer that a little
yes.
bit too.
Small businesses drive innovation. Free markets drive innovation. But free markets do not have a conscience. They don't have values.
That's right.
They don't have environmental and community and cultural concerns.
Exactly.
Which is sort of making the point that all of you said earlier, which it's up to the people who want to get involved with this and this very huge docket, as it looks like it is right now. Going now to Pat, calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Pat. Thanks for your patience.
Aloha. I'm wondering how substituting one monopoly for another will help the ratepayer.
Okay, there you go. Consumers are concerned about what they're going to have to pay every month, and if NextEra comes in and we're dealing with them instead of just, you know, whoever you do with HECO or HELCO or MECO, whatever, that it may not necessarily be a lot of help. I mean, again, this is going back to the question that Senator Roz Baker said, you know, when and how. We don't know the how very much. But looking around the table, you guys are nodding like, yeah, yeah, so. Well, now what happens? What do you tell a consumer?
I mean, it sounds like a broken record, but we set the framework in which this utility is going to operate in the state. On the upside, and being the glass half full kind of guy, you could look at this acquisition and say, here's a very efficient company that's been very successful. They have the ability to borrow low cost capital. Potentially, that can translate into lower bills for customers.
But you don't give them carte blanche.
Of course not. You have to set the constraints and the
parameters.
Which
is what all of you seem to be saying about this. Go ahead, Henry.
In Florida, the drive is to minimize rates. That's the top priority of their Public Service Commission, drive down rates. So they go with liquefied natural gas and nuclear. Our goal is to get off fossil fuels. So initially, that was a higher rate because we had a different goal.
And that's something that we seem to not be having a whole lot of conversations about. I mean, everyone wants to have their rate be lower, drive it down, but some are asking, as you just did, Henry, at what cost?
And yeah, cheap at any cost, right? No. And I will just say that I am very bullish, and I think these things are aligned. I think
yeah,
the lowest,
it's a false dichotomy, I think.
The lowest cost fuel in the future is going to be renewable. It,
I agree that in the future, and in particular in Hawaii.
In the now.
In Hawaii. But right now in Hawaii, if you take coal and you convert it to a biofuel and you burn it at a utility power plant, that's called renewable energy in state law. So we need to fix the definition, because I'm sure that when we all say renewables, we're talking about different things. To life of land, a renewable is something that's really renewable and not something that's been manipulated by a definition.
All right. So what's renewable to Blue Planet?
Well, I think this is a bit of a red herring. No one's doing this stuff in Hawaii.
I agree.
And sure.
And they may. I mean, we have one coal generator. And if they do that, I think Jeff's right. It's a red herring. The
bottom
line is
that Borneo rainforest palm oil was proposed for the utility power plant, and it's renewable energy under definition here. It was life of the land that helped stop that.
And we are appreciative, Henry, and you're right. But what happened, I think, in 2010 and 2011 is that the vision of a biofuel future fell by the wayside. I think leading up until that, you know, strategic intent, you know, is you don't have a filing of strategic intent. Filings are, you know, what they file is generally a lot of generalisms filled with little nuggets, you know, in 1,000 pages. Our opportunity in this docket is to say, hey, why do you think you're going to make money? Why do you think you're going to make money and you're going to buy down rates? You know, simply put, tell us how this is going to work.
The how.
And if it fits with our goals as a state, our goals as a community, we'll say, hey, man, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's rock and roll. If it doesn't, it's like, well, you need to make some adjustments here and here and here. And that's, I think, how this is going to transpire. And having a gazillion interveners isn't necessarily going to get us there. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but I think that, like I said, that definitely has a potential to create a lot of noise in the channel and a lot of length in the process.
All right. Well, our process can only go until 6 o'clock. We've got a whole lot of callers on the line, and they want to talk to all of you. Going now to Chris, calling us from Waimanalo. And if you want to join the conversation, our number is 941-3689 from Oahu and 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands or if you're listening to the live stream. Aloha, Chris. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi. You know, I'm wondering, given this new environment, if especially when we consider Iceland and what the Dutch are doing, where truly renewable energy, we have the most amazing opportunities. And I'm wondering if a new company, a big company, might have the resources or the capacity to maybe affect some change that we could actually have a zero cost long-term fuel source. And so I wonder if there's any thoughts on that. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much, Chris, for your call.
Thanks, Chris, for highlighting Iceland. Iceland is a great example. If you look at their carbon dioxide
emissions. We got one who says is and one who says it. All right, Henry, we'll give you a chance in a minute. But, Jeff, why is
that's
it?
That's what makes good radio.
Well, that's why you all are here.
Their carbon dioxide emissions dropped off as they went to geothermal. And now they pretty much export energy in the form of you know, aluminum that they smelt there with their excess geothermal. And I think you're right. Again, you know, being half glass full, perhaps a company like this could bring those low-cost resources, modernize the grid, bring the renewable energy resources. If we constrain them and enable customer choice, and we could have a system that's enviable for the rest of the nation.
All right. Why aren't they?
Iceland uses hydroelectric for warmth and cooling. I mean, geothermal for warmth and cooling and hydroelectric for electricity. Those are two baseload renewables. We have a lot of intermittent renewables. Denmark and Germany both have a lot of wind, but they are able to export to a lot of different countries over the European grid. We don't have that kind of interconnection. What we have is wind and solar with the possibility of either batteries or pumped storage hydro. That's a very, very different set of circumstances.
We don't have geothermal, Henry?
We have it on one island. We don't have any way of exporting it right now.
I
and not at a cost or providing the different. It's not a good offset against wind and solar.
I disagree.
I would just say the message here is different locations have different resource bases, and they should tap into the indigenous resources to power their locale.
I'm hopeful that Oahu will find, you know, we can find the renewable resources on our island to meet Oahu's needs.
We have them already.
Okay. We can agree to disagree on that.
All right. We're going to leave it there for the moment because we have a lot of callers who'd like to get in on this conversation, too, because the three of you are having way too much fun. We're going now to Carla calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Carla. Thank you for your call. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi there, fellow.
Hi there.
Energy fellers. One of the things I just want to point out, and I'd really like to point this out very clearly, is that the entire universe is 96% hydrogen, and that we have hydrogen surrounding us in the water, and Hickam Air Force Base is making hydrogen for the vehicles there. And I don't understand why hydrogen isn't brought up more often. It absolutely baffles me to no end. And I'd also like to say that without looking at a problem, there is no solution, and we are right now have an opportunity to look at these problems. And like the gentleman was saying, different islands have different types of energy potential. We have right now the greatest minds in the world. The solutions are ad nauseum, and all we have to do is put all these minds together and come up with a solution, and it's there.
All right, Carl, let's talk a little bit about some of what you've brought up, because you've called the show before and asked, why aren't we looking at hydrogen?
Yes.
And you've talked about the fact that over at, on base, they're using this, but it's not something yet that we have available for.
Well, that's not true. It is available, and I know of people that are putting together business plans and going and getting money to go do hydrogen projects.
But not for a consumer right now. I mean, she's saying, why don't we have this available
people
in
looking,
the consumer thing?
That is in progress. It is on the cusp of being a part of being in play.
All right,
and
so Carlos, so,
any more
so,
detail.
So maybe, that's in play. Maybe you're going to see something happening sometime soon, according to TPEC.
But I will tell you, everybody loves hydrogen. Hydrogen's got a lot of love around it. I mean, you curtail something, you could put that excess energy into hydrogen, and then you can reuse it. But let's remember, hydrogen is a storage medium, first of all, and the efficiency, the round-trip efficiency for hydrogen is like 50%. It's very low. So it's not a panacea. The Bush administration used to talk about a hydrogen future, and they really had a big thing, I think, in around 2005, and that kind of slowed down. Having said that, most auto manufacturers, a hydrogen vehicle is in their portfolio for the next 5 years.
And so let me agree with Ted on that. Hydrogen in the form that needed to be used does not exist in nature. Therefore, you have to use energy to create the hydrogen. Therefore, the hydrogen is a form of storage and not of a direct fuel.
But with some of what we've just been talking about, it seems that we go chasing something that sounds really, really good, whether you talked about the hydrogen future that was once looked at as being the panacea, or the fact that in 2010-11 we were rushing after biofuels, whatever it may be, that perhaps we don't look at this in such a fulsome way or look at some of what we should be looking at. And you're all seeming to agree that perhaps at this point in time, at least with the NextEra deal, we might be able to do that.
True, but
yes, no?
When it comes to technology, I think we all agree crystal balls are pretty finicky.
Well, no, that's of course, because we don't know what's coming down the pike. But to at least be able to look at that and consider the possibility that there will be changes and understand that in a way that we've seen demonstrated over the last 5-10 years that we didn't see. I mean, 10-15 years ago, we didn't have exactly that kind of viewpoint because we didn't have the examples to show.
Right,
now,
and
now
therefore this docket will have a lot more players at the table than any time before, and it's a period of great flux. So it's a period of time where we can take out these different crystal balls and begin thinking about the different options. So we're at Life Orlando really excited by what's on the plate
all
now.
All right, so are some of our callers, and they want to get back in here. Going to go off to William from Kona, and if you want to be next, our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, William. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, aloha. Can you hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Yeah, I'm on Big Island, and I've been fortunate enough to be in the PV photovoltaic industry for the last 5 years. And I don't mean to oversimplify, but I truly believe, and the commentators can give me their two cents, it's really, if we have storage, the answer is already out there. Solar's 10 cents a kilowatt hour, roughly, these days. And if NextEra can figure out storage, the problem is already solved. There's enough land area in our state. And one great example, even though it's Big Island, we do have a lot of land area. I was wondering everyone's comments on Paniolo Power, which they're storing their energy with water, gravity, potential energy. And second question, do you guys know if NextEra has any microgrid solutions? But in summary, I think microgrids and solar the answer's already here.
All right, let's see what the panel has to say, and thanks very much for your call, William. All right, who wants to tackle that first? All right, you go ahead this time.
Cost with the Big Island is the fact that the communities are so far apart from each other, and therefore customers per mile of distribution and transmission lines are much lower than the other islands, and that tends to be why rates are higher, or one of the reasons.
All right, Ted's shaking his head.
I've heard that for years, and I tell you, the cost of electricity in Nebraska is not 40 cents. Okay, in North Dakota, it's not 40 cents. It is an impact, but more of an impact on the Big Island, I believe, is the contracts that the utility is bound to that are fixed to avoided cost. So they are buying cheap, what should be cheap renewables at petroleum rates. People talk about how, you know, renewables are more expensive. That is not true. Renewables are not more expensive.
In part, you're right. That is another factor. There are a number of factors, and the solution for the Big Island is really a series of microgrids, which are now being proposed by different entities.
And it doesn't have to be this is a controversial thing to say, but the reality is that it doesn't have to be a single entity that brings that solution. That's why Paniolo Power is such a if I can say, a tremor in the force. You know, it's changing the discussion. What HIET has stood up, the Hawaii Island Energy
Cooperative,
HIEC, that also is potentially an alternative. And, you know, as I said, Google did a far better job of putting price pressure on Microsoft than the Justice Department.
All right, we're going to go off to some of our callers now because the phone lines are lighting up. And if you want to get into this conversation, you better do it fast. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Loke calling us from Honolulu. Aloha. Welcome to Town
Aloha.
Square. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just wondering, I came to the conversation a little bit late, but has anybody touched on the subject of residential wind? I think we have a lot of wind. Even when we don't have much wind, we still have enough wind to run a residential windmill. And I'm thinking, 20 years ago, hardly anybody had PV. Now we're quote-unquote saturated in some areas. But I'm thinking one gentleman has the same situation that I do. PV put in, now we drive a Leaf. So it doesn't quite cover everything. Could I have a residential windmill that powered my Leaf at night, filled it up?
All right, Mr. Leaf owner Ted Peck.
Well, I live up Aya Heights, and it is pretty windy up there. The challenge with small wind, what that commonly is called, residential small wind, where you're talking about a 10 kW generator, there's not good data for what it's going to produce. I mean, solar, we've got really good maps for solar regimes. We understand the weather. There's like five different models for what a solar year looks like, so it's easy to quantify what your return on investment is going to be on PV. Wind is a lot more challenging to do. Plus, once you put a turbine in, whether it's a vertical turbine or whether it's a traditional windmill, the mounting of that, you know, you can't put it on a roof because it'll just shake the house, you know, off. Typically, certainly a Hawaii house, so it's just a little more challenging. I would encourage you to look at it, But when I was at the state, I tried to get the office to look at it, and they said, we've looked at it, and they all suck. So.
And one other thing to keep in mind, you double the wind diameter of the blade, you have an eightfold increase in the output. So small ones have very low output, and when you put them in a very congested area and you have all the swirls of wind going out in different directions, they can be very low in efficiency.
All right, look, it doesn't sound all that great. You're going to tell me you've got a different point of view there, Jeff?
Just to be contrarian, you know, we were at the APSES, the Asia-Pacific Clean Energy Summit last year, and some innovators had a really cool-looking wind device. Looked like an old
And that's what really is important, right?
Innovation.
Cool-looking.
Exactly, right. But and they say it works. But you never know. And we'd love to see more of this distributed wind for a variety of reasons. But I want to make a quick plug for her. We're promoting a measure at the legislature called community renewables, and this would enable people who either are already tapped out or they live in a condo or they're a renter to participate in renewable energy that doesn't live on their site but on somewhere else, a solar panel somewhere else, a wind turbine somewhere else.
A solar garden, that kind of
thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
And they get
we talked about that this week on The Conversation. So, Loke, you might want to go back and look on our website, hpr2.org, The Conversation, under Talk Shows, and you can get it from earlier this week. All right, going to go now to Lee, calling us from the Big Island. Lots of folks calling in from the Big Island. Aloha, Lee. Welcome to Town Square.
Hey, how you doing? Another fine day in Happy Acres. Hey, I was just thinking that, you know, along with the photovoltaic idea, for the Big Island, we have a problem with transportation and connecting all of these systems. And, you know, a little old-fashioned rail line might help out.
Okay, I'll tell you what, I'm going to stop you right there, Lee, because this is not a free-for-all discussion. We're really focusing on the next era deal with HEI. Do you have a comment about that or a question about that?
Well, what I was thinking about was that their idea of buying lots of property and doing that diesel thing and everything else is not good, but buy the property and put out the photovoltaic panels instead and save us a ton of
Okay, so that's going back more to the solar garden idea, and there is a bill that's moving through the ledge now. Thanks very much for the call. We're going to continue to move on just in the interest of time to try to get everybody in. Mary calling us from Honolulu. Aloha,
hi.
Welcome to Town Square.
My question is, I know that Honolulu has been sort of tapped out on PV, or at least that HECO has not accepted new PV recently. And my understanding is that it's because it's an intermittent power problem. Is there anything that XTERRA can bring to that table?
All right, Mary, I'm going to stop you because I think Ted Peck has an answer for you, and we're running a little short of time. I want to get you an answer.
Yeah, there was an NREL study that came out that basically said we could do 1,000 times rather than 120%. We could do 1,000%, and the grid's going to be stable. So it's really not a technical issue. It's a financial issue. And one of the things that hasn't been done is there's been a lot of discussions. The utilities talked about the cost, but really that cost is it's avoidable cost because it's a fuel cost. And we haven't talked about and quantified the benefits to the grid of distributed generation. That really needs to be done in this discussion. So we're in a bit of trench warfare here, and we just need to continue to press through it.
All right, Mary, thanks very much for the call. Going now to Anthony calling us from Kaimuki. Aloha, Anthony. Welcome to Town Square.
Aloha. Recently, there have been more and more people who have been talking about community ownership and control of the utility. You guys have talked about Richard Ha's effort on the Big Island, but I've been hearing more and more of it here on Oahu. I'm wondering a couple of things. One, do you think that community ownership of the utility here on Oahu ought to be brought into the discussion on this docket to do with the next era takeover of HECO? And two, do you think it's practical? Could it have that triple bottom line benefit for the environment, for the community, for consumers?
All right, Anthony, thank you. And I apologize for cutting you off there a little bit, but I want to get you an answer to that. Henry?
What's different on Oahu versus Molokai, Maui, and the Big Island and elsewhere are the neighbor islands are not only saying, why don't we do it, but they're saying, here are the teams that we need to put together. Here's how we're going to do it. The only thing I've heard on Oahu is, wow, wouldn't it be a great idea? But it needs to take the next step. Who's going to do it and why?
All right. Briefly from either one of you, Ted or Jeff, anything to add to that?
I think it's certainly worth exploring. There's something very attractive about having the owners, the shareholders, be the members and the participants.
But it goes back to how and why.
The how.
The how part of it, not the why part.
I think
part
why.
Yet.
I mean, we have these across the globe.
All right, we're going to go now. Thanks. Sorry about that. Thanks, Anthony, for your call. I'm going to go to Joe calling us from Maui. Aloha, Joe. Welcome to Town Square.
Yeah, hi. A couple things. Real fast. Most of these larger wind and solar operations were paid or funded through state and federal tax credits. Is that going to continue? And not only the larger operations, the private homeowners. The other thing nobody's mentioned, OTEC and wave energy for Hawaii. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Joe. All right. Who wants to take that one up?
The federal investment tax credit is due to expire the end of next year. There has been a lot of discussion. The president introduced it in his budget, extending that tax credit. There have been Green Tea Party groups in like Georgia and Florida that have talked about extending it. So, and the utilities, because they can take that tax credit as well, they, I think, are not in full opposition to it. So that's quite possible. There is currently no expiration on the Hawaii credit, but the legislature always takes a look at that every year, which is frustrating. I think it just should be left alone, because as the price goes down, the cost to the ratepayer goes down, and plus they get back a good portion of that. We can discuss how much of it, but there's a great multiplier effect. I mean, you put in a solar, just reading here, you know, for a 68 kW solar project that the state puts in, you know, $126,000 a credit, that the oil, the value of the oil that's displaced, that revenue that stays in the state, and the multiplying effect of that over a 20, 30-year life, it's just a great bargain. That is a great investment for the state on its tax credits.
We're coming down to the last couple of minutes, so my apologies that we're not going to get to some of the other questions that Joe asked us. But just as we go right around the table again, at this point in the game, we're only a couple months into it, a lot more to come. What would you like to leave everybody with as one thought to stop and consider looking at the next era HEI deal? Go ahead, Henry, go ahead.
One of the things we need to do is unbundle rates. We need to know how much money is being spent by the utility on each aspect of what they do, because then you can have innovative companies come in and say, I can do that for less.
Yes.
Right now, there is all the prices are just combobulated into one big clump.
Right, Jeff Michelina, go ahead.
I would say, you know, this is the time to engage. You might be looking at these major, you know, billion-dollar, you know, players, but here's a chance for everyday folks to engage. And I would say get involved with policy. We want 100% renewable energy in Hawaii. The legislature is currently debating this. We can put that vision out there.
All right, Ted Peck, you got 30 seconds.
Finding a great way, the right way, to allow market forces to drive innovation and drive cost while keeping people from doing or keeping entities from doing things they ought not to do by good governance. That's really our challenge. We've invested a lot of time in putting stuff together. We're going to see the fruit of it here over the next couple of years.
All right, and because of time, we're going to have to say goodbye. We're going to have to bring you all together again and do this one more time, a little further into the process. Ted Peck, thank you for being here. Jeff Michelina and Henry Curtis, and you too. We will see you back here for another run. That's another issue next week on Town Square. Meanwhile, I'll see you tomorrow morning right here at 8 o'clock on The Conversation. Have yourselves a good evening. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Aloha.